Morning. Today's Daf Mechoros is Nun Vav. We are on the Mishnah Nun Hemed Beis. Discussions more about Maisa Behemah. We're in the ninth parak of the Masechta. We're dedicated our learning towards the topic of Maisa Behemah. And so as we are now, fourth blot into the parak. So we are now still continuing our discussion about Maisa Behemah. And we talked today about exemptions. What exactly is going to exempt which animal is going to be exempted from Maisa Behemah? So you have an animal born in your flock, so that animal together with all the other animals that are born together in your flock over the course of that year are going to be put into a pen and then released one at a time, and each one of them is going to be counted where the 10th animal is going to have Kedusha. It's going to be marked as your Maisa Behemah animal. It's going to be brought as a Karban Shlamim. Presumably you do not need to give it to the Kohen. You get to retain it for yourself, and you get to eat it as a Maisa Behemah, as a Shlamim animal. So this halacha Maisa Behemah is relevant to animals that are born in your flock. What if you purchase an animal? What if you're gifted an animal? So that's our Mishnah, and this is where we're starting with this morning. The Mishnah begins: Alokeach Oshniitel Bematana. If you purchase an animal, or if you were gifted an animal, Potem Maisa Behemah. So the Mishnah very clear says that these animals are now going to be exempt. These animals do not need to be counted together with your other animals. They're going to be kept separate, and they're simply not counted as one of your ten, as any one of your ten. So that is the basic exemption of both purchased and gifted animals. The Gemara starts off the discussion, Mna'ani Mili, so where's the source of this? Meaning, where in the Torah can we see such an exemption? So the Gemara cites a drasha, Amar Rav Kana, Amar Kra, B'chor Banecha Titin Li, Kein Ta'aseh L'Shorcha, L'Tzoncha. So we go back to Parshas Mishpatim, and the Torah there describes how B'chor Banecha, the firstborns, you're going to be giving to me. This is what you're going to be doing for Shurcha. Kinta says, sorry. So too you're going to be doing for Shurcha Tzoncha, for your Shur and for your Tzon. So over here, it's a drasha, but keep in mind, what's the context of the drasha? The context of the drasha is Bechor. So the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. But before we get to the obvious question, what is the drasha? Shurcha Tzoncha. It has to be your Shur, it has to be your sheep. Meaning that this animal has to have belonged to you, and it has to have its genesis, its birth, has to have been in your possession. If it is not yours, so then it's going to be exempt. Now, again, now we'll get to the obvious question. It's talking about Bechor. We're not talking about Bechor. We're learning about Maisa Behemah. We're talking about the exemption built into Maisa Behemah. How is the drasha talking about Maisa Behemah? So first the Gemara says over the drasha, we're on the top of Nunvav Amud Aleph, Ma Banecha in Belakuch V'Matana, Av Tzoncha Bekorcha Eina Belakuch V'Matana. Now, just like when it comes to banecha, when it comes to your children, it's ena blakuch, ena mematana. You know, you don't purchase a child. You know, you're not gifted a child. Now, those statements are funny. They are. In other words, you don't purchase a child and you're not gifted a child because that's just not how simply how children work. Children are just simply born into your flock, right? And we're talking about human children. So the So just like children are not purchased and not gifted, so too when it comes to your sheep and to your cattle, so we are excluding those that are purchased and those that are gifted. So that's the drasha. Okay, a number of issues to discuss. We'll just run first through the Gemara. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We're trying to learn out a halach of Maisa Behemah and an exemption of Maisa Behemah, and meanwhile, the pasuk you're quoting me is all about Bechor. How do we get from the Pasuk in Bechor to a halacha regarding Maisa Behemah? So, Im Kein Kein Tase. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Amakra Kein Tase. So the Gemara says, well, you go back to the Pasuk, and the Pasuk reads, Kein Tase, you're going to do. Meaning that even though the Pasuk is talking about Bechor, but on the other hand, it's confounding when the Torah says, Kein Tase, you're going to do. What kind of action point are we talking about regarding a Bechor? There is no action point when it comes to a Bechor. So, I can't be talking about a Bechor delo ise basia, because there simply is no action point when it comes to a Bechor. Deberechem kadosh, because how does a Bechor become kadosh? So it simply emerges and that's it. And yes, as Rashi himself notes, there is an idea that when the Bechor comes out, so you're going to be makdishit as well, even though it already has kedusha. And it's an idea which we're going to be which we're going to be discussing a little bit later. But when all said and done, bottom line, it has kedusha when it emerges. So when the Torah says Kein Tase, that you're going to do, there really is no action point as it relates to the Bechor. So even though, yes, the Pasuk is talking about Bechor, but contextually we see it's talking about something else. So if it's not talking about Bechor, so then we're going to move over to a sister topic, which is Maisa Behema. Teneo in Le'inyin of Maisa Behema. Okay, so therefore we're going to learn it now to Maisa Behema. And so the Torah is telling us that just like your own children are not purchased and are not gifted, so too with Maisa Behema, if you get an animal that is purchased or gifted, it's going to be exempt from the halacha of Maisa Behema. And it does not need to be counted. Now, let's go one step further. It's a strange drasha. First of all, it's a strange drasha because the pasuk itself was talking about Bechor, but the Gemara dealt with that. It's also a strange drasha because how is the drasha operating? Well, you know, with your own children, so it's not purchased or it's not gifted. Yeah, by design. Meaning, that's just simply the way it's built into your children. Your children are coming to you only because you are having children. But of course, you're not buying your children and you're not being gifted your children. Although, yes, it's true, there is adoption. But in terms of the drasha's concern, this is what we call in halacha efshar. Meaning, yeah, right. Children do not come to you either neither gifted nor purchased because that's just simply not how children work. So we are making a drasha going from efshar to efshar. By animals, animals can be purchased and can be gifted. And generally speaking, what do we say? Ein danin efshar misha efshar. We can't do that. So Tosfos over here already is sensitive to this issue. Tosfos addresses the question. You can see the Tosfos first Tosfos on this daf, on this amud, although there is a long Tosfos from a carryover from yesterday's daf. But Tosfos, Dibra Maschol, Ma bin Chayin, Ablakuch, Ma Tanavim, Tamar, Ein Dan Efshar, Mishi Efshar. So Tosfos himself is bothered by this very question. Kedamer Rabbi Kiva, Bim Menachos, Beperk HaToda, V'yishlomer Dahasam, Hu, Dibibinyan Av Yalef, Pesach Doros, Mepesach Mitzrayim, Aval Hekeshahu. Really interesting answer of Tosfos. When do we say Ein Dan Efshar, Mishi Efshar? So Tosfos says that's when we're doing a drasha like a binyan av, where we have established a precedent, and now we're trying to relate the precedent to other areas. So there, in order to go from one category to another through a methodology of binyan av, so there has to be apples and apples. It has to be oranges and oranges. It can't go from apples to oranges. It can't go from efshar to efshar, or from efshar to efshar. Over here, however, we're learning through hekesh, and hekesh, as we've seen so many times in other gemaras, is like a real rule breaker. Right? Ein meshivin ala hekesh. You can't ask a question on a hekesh. Hekesh is when the Torah just simply puts two ideas next to one another, and at that point in time, the hekesh is so strong, so that even though you have questions to ask, but we simply don't challenge a hekesh is unpenetrable. So over here, Tosfos is arguing that this is learned via hekesh, and even though, yes, it's true, there is no purchase and there is no gifting when it comes to children, but nevertheless, we can learn out the halacha of lakuach hamatana from your bechor to that of meister behema and with creating that exemption. Okay. Back to our Gemara. Our Gemara ve'ema. Why don't we suggest the following? Okay, so now we have an exemption to learn together. The exemption is not purchased and not gifted animals. Now we are applying it to Maisa Behema, but remember, the Torah itself didn't make that so clear. This Torah itself was talking about Bechor, but we moved off topic of Bechor because there is no Asiyah when it comes to Bechor. Fine. So the Gemara says, but as long as we're moving off Bechor and moving to another topic, why are you so sure that we should be going to Maisa Behema? Why don't we go to other carbonos? For example, Behema Taneo Inya on Chatos L'Asham. So let's move it to the topic of both Chatos and Asham. Meaning that when you have a Chatos or Asham obligation, you have to use an animal that's yours, that's born in your flock. You cannot purchase an animal, nor can you be gifted an animal for Chatos and Asham. And we're going to learn it from this drasha. So the Gemara says, no. Dumya Debincha. Ma Bincha She'eno Ba'al Chet, Atzoncha V'Sharcha She'eno Ba'al Chet. So the Gemara says no, because we are learning it from the Bincha. And Bincha, your son comes to you not with a chait. So too over here, we are learning something that is not coming through a chait. Meaning it has to be a type of carbon that is not being learned out through a chait. The Ema, the Gemara says, why don't we make the following suggestion? Taneo inyan la'ola l'shamim. So the Gemara says, what about Ola and Shlamim? why don't we turn to those topics and why don't we learn the exemption to those topics? So Dumya de Bincha, Ma Bincha Shein Abba Benedav Nedava, Avtzon Chav Vishorcha V'chulei. So the Gemara says, okay, but again, it has to be somewhat comparable. When it comes to Bincha, your son, so there's no Neder, there's no Nedava, meaning it's not coming through a voluntary act, right, through a voluntary donation. So it has to be the type of carbon that has not come through a voluntary donation, and therefore excluding Ola and Shlamim, which generally come through voluntary donation. So the Gemara says, okay, but I do know of a carbon Ola that is not voluntary, and notably the Olas HaRi'iya. Again, we just spoke about this kind of carbon recently in the Daf. Every one of the Gimel Regalim, you go up to Yerushalayim, you go into the Azara, you come in, not empty-handed. But you come in with a carbon ola. It's called an ola sari'iyah. So it's an ola that is not voluntary. It is absolutely obligatory. So why don't we say that the exemption of lakuach ematana is specifically for the ola sari'iyah? So domi debincha, ma bincha shein kavula ozman, afshor chavitzoncha shein kavula ozman. So the Gemara says, again, it's not perfectly comparable. Because when it comes to bincha, your children, so your children come about to you and it's not time-bound. Meaning, your children will come at sporadic times. And there is no calendaric point where, okay, now we have to have children. Unlike the Olas Riyah, which is calendarically based. Good. So, ima bin chayna b'lakuach klal, afshor chavetzon chayna b'lakuach klal. So the Gemara says, okay. So now we have ruled out all the other karbanos. And so therefore, the drasha now is still where we started with. That the exemption of a purchased animal and a gifted animal, which we know is not true by Bincha, it's not true by your children, it's also not going to be true by Maisa Behem as well. Fine. So the drasha now stands. Now the Gemara says, now that we have a drasha, so here comes our question. You mean to tell me now that there is no vehicle, there's no instrument whatsoever where there's going to be a purchased or a gifted animal that is going to be, that's not going to be included in Maisa Behema? Meaning, again, by Bincha, there is simply no lakuach, there's no matana when it comes to your children. So by Maisa Behema, it doesn't exist, right? The Gemara says, but it does. In the following circumstance. Alama Amarav Asi, Amarav Yochanan, Lakach Asara Ubrim Bimei Iman, Kula Nichnasan Ledil Esaser. So let's say you buy 10 fetuses. So you buy 10 fetuses. Now, we all know, this always poses a problem because it's a davishalah bala olam. It's something which is not yet here. So the purchasing of a fetus always has a halachic issue regarding its kinyan. Okay. The problem is a problem, but the Gemara doesn't deal with it, and there are ways of making such a purchase. Let's, for our purposes right now, assume that the purchase is doable, and now. I go ahead and I purchase a fetus. And Rav Yochanan, just to make his point as clear as possible and as strong as possible, not only did I purchase one fetus, but I purchased 10 fetuses. I was contemplating last night if it's fetuses or feti. But fetuses just sound better. I don't know if I'm right. Anyway, so kulam nechnasam ledir lehis aser. So all of them are going to go into the pen in order to be subject to Maisa Behema. So why should that be? Meaning, we just learned together that there is a drasha that tells us that just like bincha, your children, there is no lakuach and there is no matana. Your children only come to you via because you and your wife have them. So if that's true, so the same thing should be true regarding Maisa Behema. And there should be no circumstance in which there should be a purchased or a gifted animal that is subject to Maisa Behema. And yet, Rav Yochanan's halacha, which the Gemara assumes is correct. Rav Yochanan's halacha is that if I purchase a fetus, so when that fetus is now born, it will be subject to Maisa Behema. But if it's based on the drasha, then there should never be a circumstance. So Amar Rava, Amar Kratas, Ebeshas Asiya, Mi'ed HaKasov. So the Gemara says, but if we go back to the drasha, where everything is rooted in, so the Torah says, Kein Tase. And the word Tase means an action. It means that this exemption only exists when there's an action that can be done. Obviously, the fetus in utero, even though it's going to be a purchase, but nevertheless, it's not going to be an exemption. Why? Because at the time of the purchase, there's simply no action to be done. Obviously, as a fetus, it can't be offered as a carbon. Okay. So that means to say that, yes, there is an exemption of lakuach, but the exemption of lakuach is only at the time when I could have brought it as a carbon. If it's a time when I cannot bring it as a carbon, so then there's no exemption. Okay. Gufa, the Gemara is going to go basically over this point again, just a different format. Amr Vasi, Amr Rav Yochanan, Laka Chasara Ubrim, Bemei Iman, if I purchase 10 fetuses, Kula Nechzasan Ledir Lehis Aser. So they're all going to go into the pen and they're all going to be counted towards our Meiser Behemer. Va'anan Tanan Al-Kuach, Oshit Nitin Lom Bematanan Patram and Meiser Behemer. So the Gemara says, aye, but what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah tells us that a purchased animal or a gifted animal is going to be exempt. So how do I resolve the halacha of Rav Yochanan and yet the exemption that we learned in our Mishnah? So we all know the answer, meaning we just learned the answer in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to go over it again with just a slightly different format. Amar Rebbe Lazar, Rav Yochanan Chazai Bechama, Rebbe Lazar, who was a student of Rav Yochanan. And either it was after the death of Rav Yochanan, or doesn't have to be, it could be that Rav Yochanan was still alive, but he had a dream that night, and in that dream that night, Rav Yochanan, he had an appearance, he saw the vision of Rav Yochanan. So Milsa Ma'al Ya'amina. So he knew the next morning that when he went to the Beis Medrash, I'm going to say something smart. I wish I had that feeling. I'm going to say something smart. And as Rashi points out, he viewed it as a siman. And I know that we are generally against omens. I know that. However, this Gemara kind of repeats itself a number of times throughout Shas. And so, okay, so seeing a vision of your Rebbe. And we do give a lot of credence to a dream and its ability to portend and to predict the future. But anyway, he knows he's going to say something smart. So, Amakra Tase, and so to the question of, how can there be a blanket exemption that any animal that I purchase and any animal that's gifted to me is going to be exempt from Maaser Behema? And then I learned the halacha of Rav Yochanan, which is that if I purchase fetuses, they will not be exempt from Maaser Behema. So he wakes up after having seen Rav Yochanan dream and he gives the following answer. Tase, b'shas asiya, mi'ita kasov. Yeah. So the exemption is going to be only at a time when I purchase it and it is fit to be offered as a carbon. But if I purchased it prior to that point in time, i.e. it was a fetus inside of its mother, so then there's not going to be an exemption, like we said earlier. Eitzer Rishimun Meliakim L'Rev Lazar Halakua Chal Al-Mechusar Zman. Okay. Purchased animal the exemption of a purchased animal is going to be chal on an animal that was purchased premature. What is premature when it comes to an animal? We all know. Premature means before its eighth day. In other words, from the time the animal is born until 8 days later, it cannot be offered as a carbon. Why? Because the Torah says so. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Only from day 8 and onward, only then it can be offered as a carbon. So, an animal that is purchased within its first week of its life. So what would you say? Exempt or not exempt? Well, it's interesting. Based on what we just learned together, we should say there is no exemption. The exemption is only going to be true when I purchase it at a time where it could be brought as a carbon. So just like we learned that when you are purchasing a fetus, it's going to be the exemption does not kick in. So too, if I purchase an animal within its first week of its life, so the exemption should not kick in. And meanwhile, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim says in the name of, says to Rabbi Elazar that the lakuach exemption is going to be applied to mechusar zman, an animal that's born within its first week of its life. So Amar Leh, so in response to that, he says Zuena Mishnah. So the first response is, I'm just simply not buying it. Meaning, okay, you're citing it's a b'raisa, and I'm just not, I don't necessarily have to agree to it. Now when I say that, keep in mind, the Amorayim have the ability and the right to challenge and question the validity of a b'raisa. That's it. Meaning, after the Amorayim, no longer. Fine. So, but anyway, but you understand, though, that he's rejecting it because it goes against what we just learned together. We just learned that the exemption of lakuach is only when it's a time of asiya. And over here, if I'm buying an animal that is within its first week of its life, from birth until the eighth day, meaning any time from day 1 through day 7, so then it is not shas asiya. You can't offer it as a carbon, and therefore the exemption doesn't kick in. So his first response is, I just simply don't accept the b'raisa. I could make an argument where the b'raisa is acceptable, but meaning to say, but we don't paskin like that. For example, the Gemara, that's the next approach of the Gemara. The intim salamar mishnah, and if you want to tell me that we're not going to just reject the b'raisa out of hand, fine. We won't reject the b'raisa out of hand, but we'll localize it and we'll limit it to the opinion of one Tana. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Shimon. It is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Shimon da'amar mechusas ma nechnas nadir lehisaser. He's of the opinion that if I purchase a mechusar zman, so it will go into the pen, it will be counted. Varehi kebechor. And in this regard, it's going to be like the bechor. Consider. Ma bechor kadosh lefnei zmano, v'krav lachar zmano, because with the bechor. When does it become kadosh? Before it's eligible to be brought as a karban. And that's, of course, by design. A bechor is born, and by virtue of the fact that it's born, it's going to be imbued with kedusha. It's still mechusar zman, meaning it's not 8 days old yet, obviously. So a bechor, by design, receives its kedusha before it's eligible to be brought as a karban. So then, af mechusar zman, kadosh lefnei zmano v'krav la'achar zmano. So we can have this idea of any mechusar zman, where it could receive its kedusha before it's valid to be brought, offered as a karban, and then obviously when it hits the point of eligibility, meaning at 8 days old, it could be offered as a karban. So there is that opinion. So the Gemara says, if we take that opinion, so then we can fit in the that brisa that you quoted within that opinion. But you don't necessarily have to subscribe to that opinion. That is the opinion only of Rabbi Shimon. But if you do subscribe to that opinion, so then there is a way of explaining the brisa. Okay. Yeah.
Why do we have the same chashash by grain? You know, if somebody brings grain, we take maestro, trumas and maestros from it, and here, why don't we do the same thing? Why don't we assume either it was owned by a Jew, how come he didn't count as sheep?
Right, but it's not, I understand. But in this regard, the cases are not comparable. Meaning that by maestro dagon, well, the truth of the matter is, there is a discussion about if I purchase maestro dagon, does the obligation of trumas and maestros come along with that? In other words, generally speaking, we assume the owner takes it. But this is not an issue of cheshash. This is a legal exemption, period. Meaning the legal exemption is such that when I purchase an animal, and that animal was not counted by this previous owner. Now, the previous owner just simply sold it. Okay? Could be that it was in within the first year, and he was perfectly legitimate in not having counted it himself. Once he sells it to me, there's just simply a legal exemption. This animal does not have to be put into the hopper. It does not have to be counted towards my 10. That's it. It's a blanket legal exemption. Totally unrelated to whether he already counted this animal or did not count this animal. The following brisa was taught in front of Rav. Ezu esnan. What is an esnan shenichnas ladir leisaser that's going to be put into the pen and counted with the other animals? Okay, so just a little bit of background so that we are familiar with what we're about to learn for the next, let's say, 10 minutes. And that is the topic of Esnan, and that is the following. Okay, generally speaking, you're going to ask the Torah's idea regarding prostitution. So the Torah says don't do it. Now, with that stated, okay, the Torah is not in favor of prostitution, to say the least. It is the antithesis of Kedusha. On the other hand, okay, just I'm contextualizing it, hopefully correctly, but on the other hand, it's one of the oldest occupations in history, and the Torah says as follows: if you have a zonah, if you have a woman who is selling her services and she is getting an animal in exchange for those services, that animal now has a status. It's called esnan, right? The status of esnan means now that this woman, although her occupation itself can be viewed as a non-holy occupation, but she still wants to go to the Beis HaMikdash. She still wants to bring karbanos. And so what she cannot do, and not only she, by the way, but anybody who gets possession of this animal, is that it cannot bring this animal. This animal is barred and banned as being brought as a karban to the Mizbeach. Now, this is very easy to understand just from a sensible standpoint. Meaning when you're bringing a karban to the Beis HaMikdash, you are offering it to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This animal obviously has the tainting of it, in that it was used in exchange for an act of prostitution. And this is what the Torah refers to as esnan. That is the designation, that's the label that's given to the animal that is used for payment for services rendered by a zona. Okay. Now, you somehow get a hold of an esnan animal. Okay, right. However, in other words, we're talking about now the man who's basically repurchasing it from the zona. So you get a hold of an esnan animal. So I would have made a very simple argument. Don't put it in the hopper. Meaning don't count it towards one of your 10. Because consider, it can in fact become the 10th animal. And now it's going to get extraordinarily awkward. Because now as the 10th animal comes out, that's the Aslan animal that I'm just counting as number 10. And now I'm doubling as a Shlamim. Oh, but that's weird. Because I'm not allowed to offer it as a Karban. What do I do then? So I would have made the argument that, okay, so don't put it in the hopper. Don't count it as one of the 10. Leave it out because it cannot be offered as a Karban. And now what we're learning is, you put it into the pen, and you count as one of the 10. And because of the requirement of randomization, it can in fact be coming out as number 10. What do you do then? Let it graze. Perfect. So let it graze, let it develop a blemish, and you're going to eat it with a blemish. It can't be offered as a Karban. Okay. So So what happens is that you hired a prostitute, you gave her an animal for services rendered, and then what you did is you repurchased the animal from her. Now this animal is a nesnan animal, so is it exempted from from being put in the pen? And the answer of the Gemara says is no, it's not exempted. You put it into the pen, and you let it and you let it be counted, and even if it's going to be number 10, so be it. Now, that's the Gemara's next question. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. And right, so we're focusing on the Esnan Halacha, but the Gemara says, but did we just ignore the transaction? Meaning the animal was paid for services. Okay, that's already transaction number one. And then you repurchased it back. That's already transaction number two. So this animal went through not only one, but two transactions. Now, by the way, it ended up going back to its owner. So, right, it's a funny argument which the Gemara does not make. Which is, well, since it went back to the owner, so that cancels out both purchases. The Gemara doesn't make that argument. Presumably, it's just not a good argument. Anyway, it just went through two transactions, so it should be exempt from Maisa Behema. Like, what discussion are we even having? So the Gemara says, okay, Ishtamita Adam Rav Asim Rav Yochanan. So I'll tell you what you forgot. You forgot about the halacha of Rav Yochanan, which we learned twice today so far, and now we're going to be learning a third time. So the halacha of Rav Yochanan is that what you could do is you could purchase a fetus and that's not going to be exempt from Maisa Behema. So over here now, it's a really strange scenario. I'm just going to review the case now. So what you did is you hired a prostitute and you paid her. And how did you pay her? Not with a live animal, but with a fetus. Right, so it's a strange contract, but okay, she was amenable to that kind of payment. So you paid her with the fetus, and then what you did is you bought the fetus back from her. So now under those circumstances, so now we have an animal with an esnan status. It was purchased, but because it was purchased as a fetus, it's not going to be exempt from Maisa Behema. And the discussion now can revolve around just the esnan portion of the discussion, in which it's an esnan animal. And so therefore it can't be offered as a carbon to the Mizbech, but still you're going to put it into the pen and it's going to be counted as one of the 10. Okay. Why? Because it's a davar shelo bala olam. It's not something that's not here. Okay. No, it was hers. In other words, with services rendered, she has acquired it. In other words, it's like with any services. In other words, when you are contracting services, once the services have been offered, so then that's it. You have acquired it. Got services. In other words, that was payment for her services. Okay. So the formal kinyan, the Gemara elsewhere that talks about hagba, mesira, whatever. In other words, it was payment. The payment was owed because of services. The Gemara wants to know, the case over here got a little bit complicated it's already complicated, don't get me wrong. We're talking about hiring a prostitute with a fetus. Okay, it's already a complex scenario. But why are we dealing with a case where it was transacted the first time to her for services rendered, and basically she purchased it, and then he's buying it back from her. Why are we going through two transactions? Meaning, if we want to make the point, why don't we just simply make the point where she's just simply purchasing it through her services, and why couldn't we have stopped right there? That's the Gemara's next question. As we now turn to the top of Nevav Amud Beis. V'te Asrei Ihi. So why isn't she doing Maiser Behema? So the Gemara says, B'zona Kusis. So the Gemara says, because it's a non-Jewish zona. And as such, she's not obligated, meaning she's not Jewish. So the Gemara says, "Velukma bezona Yisraelis v'tasra ihi." So the Gemara says, "Okay, I hear you, but why doesn't the Braisa come up with a case where the zona in question is a Jewish zona?" And again, I'm stating the obvious. The Gemara is not condoning, right? The most obvious point of the day. But the but still, why doesn't the Braisa come up with a case where the zona is a zona Yisraelis, and that way you don't have to go through the double transaction. You don't have to give it to her as payment for her services and then buy it back from her. Like, why don't we just simply have her being a Zona Yisraelis, and now she has acquired it through her services that was rendered, and now the animal is going to be, on one hand, be put into the pen and counted with the other animals, because an Estan is not going to be exempt from Meister Mehema, and I, what about the fact that it was purchased? So again, we'll go back to what we said earlier. It was a fetus. So the Gemara says, Kamash Malan, the Zona Yisraelis will have the Estan. So the Gemara says like this, and now we get on to a controversial topic, which is, when exactly is an animal going to have an Estan status? Meaning, is there going to be a difference whether the man hired a Zona who was a Jew versus a man who hired a Zona who was a non-Jew? Okay. A man should not be hiring either. Again, the most obvious point of the day. Okay, but is there going to be halachic differences between them? So what the Gemara now is arguing is that that's what the Braisa is teaching us. Yes, there is. Excuse me. A non-Jewish zona. So, when paying her with an animal, that is going to have an estan status, and that's going to be prohibited. Now, a kohen is not to have relations with a zona. It's the pasuk in the Torah. And if a kohen has relations with a zona, he's going to be violating an issur d'oraisa. And so now, here's what we're learning, and this part is admittedly a little bit tricky, but I'll slow down just a little bit so that we can just digest what the Gemara is saying. When we're talking about a non-Jewish zona, the payment that's given to her in exchange for her services, that this is all according to Abaye. The payment that's given to her for her services rendered, that payment is going to have Esnan status. So vis-a-vis the payment, she is a zona. Vis-a-vis the Isser of a coin being with her because she's a zona, that's not an issur d'oraisa. It is still usur for him to be with her, but it's not an issur d'oraisa, and he's not going to get malchus for such an act. Now, if you're following carefully, we're cutting this really thin, meaning not only cutting it thin, meaning we're going in two different directions regarding the payment. She's a zona. Regarding the issur of coin to her, she's not a zona. Why should that be? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain. Now, if I move over the topic from Zona Kusis to Zona Yisraelis, so what's going to happen according to Abaye? The exact opposite. The mirror opposite. So Zona Yisraelis, Esnan Amutar. So for a Zona Yisraelis, the payment that's given to her does not have the status of Esnan. However, v'koin abayla, loke mishum lo yichalal zaro. But if a kohen has relations with her, so now the kohen violated the Issur d'oraisa of having relations with a Zona. And so therefore, he's going to be subject to Malkus. Okay. So now, all this requires some form of an explanation. Why should this be? So Abai goes on to explain. So Zona Kusis, Esnena, Asur, Gamar, Toeva, Toeva, Ma'arayus. So as far as the Zona Kusis and the payment that's given to her, so for this, we're learning out a Gzereshava. The word Toeva, which is used in reference to the Esnan payment, and the word Toeva that's used in the Parsha of Arayus. Right, all the forbidden relations. So, when we talk about Arayus, what is the one thing that we could say regarding the definition of an erva? The definition of an erva is there is no tfisas kedushin. If a man is trying to be mekadesh a woman who is an erva to him, the kedushin just simply does not take effect. A man attempts to be mekadesh his sister, the kedushin does not take effect. There's no tfisas kedushin, and that's true by all Arayus, with one notable exception, and that of course is Anida. A need is an erva, but there's tfisas kedushin. Okay, but that's the exception. The rule is there's no tfisas kedushin. So now when I take that idea and move it over to Esnan, where the Torah also uses the words toeva, so they are the same thing. It has to be the kind of zona where there's no tfisas kedushin. Now, if a man would want to marry a Jewish prostitute, so there would be tfisas kedushin. So the only time that the payment is going to have Esnan status is only when he's paying a zona that there is no tfisas kedushin. That, of course, would be a non-Jewish zona. Okay. Now, v'kohen habaalai no loke, Mishum lo yichalal zaro, de lo yichalal zaro, merchman of a high lav zarehu. Ah, and what about now the isra of a kohen to said zona? Where if a kohen has relations to a zona, to a non-Jewish zona, so is he going to be subject to malchus? So there Abaye goes in the other direction. No, he's not going to be receiving malchus. Why? Because the isser of going to a zona is couched in the Torah in the beginning of Parshas Amor with the words lo yichalal zaro. Because in doing so, what's going to end up happening is that his children are going to be mechulal. Now, if he has relations with a zona, a non-Jewish zona, and if they have children, so the child is not going to be a halal, the child's just simply going to be not Jewish. So there's no mechalo zaro in that regard, so therefore there's no malchus and there's no issa de araisa of the kohen having relations with that non-Jewish zona. So, if you follow the last little bit of the Gemara over here, certainly a tricky piece of Gemara regarding the idea that if a man has relations with a non-Jewish zona, so the payment that he gives there is all according to Abaye. And again, this is subject to controversy and other position. But at least in our Gemara just simply presents Abaye's position. In our Gemara, if you're giving a non-Jewish zona payment, so according to Abaye, so that will have Eston status. But if a kohen has relations with a non-Jewish zona, so that's not an issa d'oraisa subject to malchus. On the other hand, the flip is true regarding the Jewish zona. Regarding the Jewish zona, payment is not going to have Eston status, but a kohen having relations with a Jewish zona is going to be subject to a malchus d'oraisa. Okay. We are now on the Mishnah on Nun Vav Amud Beis and our new topic, and we're still in the world of exemption. What is going to be exempt from Eisa Behema? So in the previous Mishnah, we learned about a purchased animal and a gifted animal is going to be exempt from Eisa Behema. What else is going to be exempt from Eisa Behema? And that's a partnership. Anytime you have a partnership, two Jews are in partnership over an animal, so there's going to be an exemption from Eisa Behema. Okay, how do we know that? So the Gemara is going to give us the drasha. But before we get to the drasha, so just the facts. The Mishnah here gives us the facts. Ha'achin v'hashutfin. When I have brothers who form a partnership. Now, the way Rashi understands the Mishnah over here is dealing with one scenario. You have brothers who inherited an estate, divided the estate, and then really like each other, right? Mm-hmm. And decide, we'll go into a partnership together. Great. So now, They have taken assets, they put it together. Assets that at one point in time were one. It was one entity. It was all part of an estate. But they divided the estate. Once they divide the estate, so then it's viewed as each one of them having separate accounts. When they bring it back together again, it is a partnership. And later in tomorrow's daf, we're going to talk about the idea of, is that true? In other words, just the basic idea of, isn't the estate coming back together again? Isn't that now just simply called an estate once again? We'll talk about that tomorrow. But in the meantime, however, the simple way of learning the Mishnah is that the brothers who divide their estate and then put it back together again, it's now a partnership. As a partnership, so what's the halachas? There are two halachas that are going to be affected by a partnership. So chayav and bekalbon, so they're going to be obligated in the kalbon. Now the kalbon is that little extra that you pay when you pay your machzis a shekel. Annually, you're going to be getting a knock on the door. You have to contribute machzis a shekel, which is going to be the operating budget for the Beis HaMikdash over the course of the year. And everyone has to give a machzis a shekel. And when you give a machzis a shekel, you have to give a little bit of extra. That little bit of extra is called a kalbon. Just a little bit extra, an extra 1/48th, right? Just 2%, approximately 2% additional with your machzis a shekel. Why? So Rashi over here goes over what we learned back. It could be based on two possibilities. One is that you want to tip the scales. Meaning, remember, back then, money was coinage based on its weight. And so what ends up happening is that when coins get passed from one hand to another, so some of the coin gets rubbed out, and you're paying with a coin that may be a little bit rubbed out, you want to make sure that you're giving the full amount, so you give a little bit of extra in order to tip the scale. That's Rashi describes that as hechra. Right, to be korea, to tilt the scale. Another possibility is because of the money changer. Right, remember we just discussed this a couple days ago in the daf as well, where what ends up happening is that you're going to be paying a silver coin, and what's going to happen is that to give a break to the person who's schlepping all that coin all the way to the base of Mikdash, is he's going to go to the money changer and he's going to turn that from silver into gold, because with just one golden coin. So if you remember back, Rashi taught us that You can get 25 silver coins that can be exchanged for a comparable one coin of gold. Comparable meaning that one silver coin to one gold coin, same amount of weight, 25 silver to one gold. Anyway, so there's going to be a money changer involved. So the money changer is going to pay a little bit of a fee. So the kabbalah that could be there to satisfy the money changer. Either way. In other words, every time you give machzor a shekel, you're going to be giving a kabbalah. However, as we're going to learn together, if it's not a partnership, you're going to be exempt from the kabbalah, which is coming up in just a moment in the Mishnah. So over here, you have halachas that are basically inversed based on whether it is or it isn't a partnership. So if it's a partnership, so then you're going to be exempt from Maaser Behema. You're going to be obligated in the kabbalah. However, if it's not a partnership, so let me read the Mishnah from the beginning. When they are obligated in the kabbalah, patur mi Maaser Behema. So they're going to be exempt from Maaser Behema because it's a partnership. And chayavim b'maaser behema, when they're going to be obligated in maaser behema, paturim in a kabon. So they're going to be exempt from the kabon. Meaning if it's the estate that's paying the machzor shekel, and they're not paying it based on it's their money, so then the kabon is not required to be paid. Right, see Rashi for more of an explanation of why that is, but for our purposes right now, let's just simply assume that that's so. Kana mitzvisas abayis chayavim v'im la paturim. If they acquired it from the Tfisas Abayis is the undivided estate, so then you're going to be chayav, and if not, they're going to be pater. Chalku chazer v'nishtatfu chayav mekab m'turmin ma'is behema. And the Mishnah just simply reviews for us that if the estate was divided, and then they put their monies back together again, that's called a partnership. And as such, they're going to be exempt, they're going to be exempt from Maaser Behema, they're going to be obligated in the Kabon. Okay. So basically what we learned together in the Mishnah is that when you have a partnership, you're exempt from Maaser Behema. Good. Now, Tana Rabbanan Yelachav Lo Shel Shutfus. So the Torah, when describing the mitzvah of Maaser Behema, so the, now, again, second time this morning this is going to happen. The pasuk that's being quoted is not really talking about Maaser Behema, it's talking about Bechor. So, And the Gemara is sensitive to that, of course, and the Gemara is going to address that. But in the meantime, however, so yilachav lo shel shutfus. So it's to be to yours, exclusively yours, and not of a partnership. Yachol afilu kanu b'tfisas habayis. What if it's the inherited estate that's not yet divided? So tamar lomar yiyeh. No, that's considered a single entity. That's not considered a partnership, and therefore that estate, while it's undivided, is going to be subject to Maaser Behema. V'hai b'bechor k'siv. Now, the Gemara is sensitive. You're quoting a pasuk from Parshas Korach. In Parshas Korach, that pasuk that you quote is talking about Bechor. It's not talking about Maaser Behema. So he may know in Bechor the Ha'isa b'Shutfus Tichsiva Bechor b'Karchem v'Tzonchem. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we know that there is no partnership exemption when it comes to Bechor. In fact, the Torah just says goes the other direction. When you have a partnership and your animals are giving birth to its firstborn, it will have kedushas Bechor. So therefore, we know that the exemption of partnership cannot be talking about Bechor because we know the other direction. So therefore, Taneu le'inyan Maaser Behema. So therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to move topic over to Maaser Behema. Second time today we're doing this. We're quoting a pasuk in the Torah that's talking about Bechor, but because of the impossible nature of it going on Bechor, so we slide over the exemption to Maaser Behema. I'm Rav Yirmiya, and so we'll just finish up today with the statement of Rav Yirmiya. Pamim shechayavim bezeh bezeh, pamim shepaturim mizeh mizeh, pamim shechayavim bekabon paturim in a maaser behema, or pamim shechayavim in a maaser behema paturim in a kabon. So we can go through all four permutations of being. Now, our Mishnah only gave us two permutations. When you're obligated in one, you're exempt from the other. But we can go in like our Mishnah, obligated in one, exempt from the other, in both directions. But we can also be obligated in both, and we could also be exempt in both. Okay? It sounds tricky. It's really not. Chayavim b'zeh b'zeh, when are you going to be obligated in both? Shechalku b'ksafim v'lo chalku b'behema. When the brothers decide the following. You know what? Let's take the estate and let's divide the cash portion of the estate. Let's leave the animals as part of the estate. Okay, so now they're going to be obligated in both. Meaning in terms of Maaser Behema, obligated. Why? Because the animals have gone undivided. And they're going to be obligated in the kabon. Why? because vis-a-vis the kesef, the money, that was divided. Okay. Now, peturim mizem mizeh shechalka bebehema velo chalka b'ksafim. Now, there could be an exemption on both ma'aser behema and the kalbon, very simple, where they divided the animals, but they did not divide the money. So they divide the animals, so what do we have regarding the animals? A partnership. Okay, exemption. The money is undivided, so therefore what do we have? The estate's paying the machitzas a shekel, exemption. Now, chayav mekalbon peturim me'maaser behema shechalka b'zeh uv'zeh. Now, how can I be chayav and the kalbon and exempt from ma'aser behema? That's when everything got divided. We already learned that in the Mishnah. And chayav me'maaser behema peturim min hakalbon shelo chalka b'zeh b'zeh. And when is there going to be an obligation by ma'aser behema and an exemption from kalbon? Where nothing was divided. And again, we learned that back in the Mishnah. Rav Yirmiyah did a great exercise together with us. But what the Gemara wants to know is, Rav Yirmiyah, like, what did we just learn together? Like, in other words, once you know the rules of partnerships and exemptions, so then we could have done all this on our own. Okay? So, pshita. So, the Gemara is bothered by exactly that point. Isn't that obvious? So, chilku b'behem avlo chilku b'ksafim itzirichlei. So, the Gemara says, no, there is a bit of a chiddush in Rav Yirmiyah, because in the case of the division of the animals and the monies were not divided. So, the brothers did a strange thing with the estate. They started dividing the estate, but only when it comes to the animals. They didn't divide the money. So, you could have made the following argument. And this is what Rav Yirmiyah is teaching us. This is the chiddush of Rav Yirmiyah. The argument you could have made is as follows. Look, you see that the brothers are starting to divide the estate. So you could see now where we're trending. We're trending towards division. We've already liquidated, or divided, I should say better. We already divided the animals. So we could say now that even though the cash, the money, has not yet been divided, but it stands to be divided. In other words, that's where we're trending. And therefore, since we're trending towards a division of the money, so therefore we can make the argument that we should not be exempt from the kalbon, that little additional extra payment that comes along with the machzor of shekel. So kamash malan. So the chiddush is no. Even though, of course, we're trending towards division, but when all said and done, the exemption is very simple. Have we or have we not divided? If we divided the animal, so then we lost the exemption of ma'aser behema. If we've not yet divided the money, even though we're trending towards division, but if we have not yet divided the money, we're going to be exempt from the kalbon. Period.
Can't you assume all the states are earmarked for division?
Right. And that could also mean correct. And that could also be part of what the Gemara is saying, meaning that we don't look at an estate divided until it's actually divided. Okay. Adkan.